Welcome back, everyone. It looks like we're really diving deep into the world of education this time around.
Yeah, we are.
A whole stack of excerpts from the Paste the Text newsletter this time. And
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a lot going on.
It seems like it.
From like teacher recruitment challenges to some pretty big questions about like how education is funded and governed.
Yeah.
Both here in Vermont and across the country.
Absolutely.
It's a lot to unpack.
It's a dynamic time for education, for sure. And what's interesting is that a lot of these trends we're seeing, they're all kind of interconnected. You know, we're seeing like policy debates, economic pressures, and societal shifts kind of all playing out in the education arena.
Okay, so let's dive into the deep end here. Where should we start? What really jumped out at you as we were wading through these articles?
Well, we can't ignore the big news here in Vermont. The Agency of Education, the AOE, as it's often called, they're the ones setting the overall direction for education in the state. Well, they've put out this policy memo proposing some major changes to Vermont's education system.
Right. The whole consolidation thing. Merging school districts, potentially closing schools, and those standardized staffing formulas. It sounds like a pretty dramatic shakeup.
It's definitely generating a lot of buzz, and understandably so. I mean, the memo, it points to concerns about Vermont's high per pupil spending.
Right.
Without necessarily seeing the results, you know, in student outcomes.
Oh, yeah.
And they're also talking about governance inefficiencies, essentially arguing that having so many independent school boards, might be leading to administrative bloat and slowing down decision making.
So they're thinking is bigger is better. Streamline everything, create some economies of scale.
That seems to be the underlying logic, but of course it's not quite as simple as that.
Right.
The devil's in the details, as they say.
Right. Right.
And this is where things get really interesting, because the proposal is raising some important questions about local control, you know, how these changes might impact different communities across the state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can imagine this is making some waves.
Mm-hmm.
What's the reaction been like so far?
I mean, as you might expect, it's a mixed bag. You know, there are folks who are cautiously optimistic, hoping that this might lead to a more equitable distribution of resources and better outcomes for students.
Yeah,
and then,
you
know, there are those who are strongly opposed, concerned about the potential loss of local control, the impact on small rural schools, and whether this is really addressing the root causes of the challenges, you know, facing education in Vermont.
Definitely seems like a complex issue with no easy answers.
Yeah.
It makes me think about those standardized staffing formulas you mentioned. I mean, how do you even begin to create a formula that accounts for the unique needs of every school and every student?
That's exactly the kind of question a lot of folks are wrestling with. The idea behind these formulas is to try to create a more equitable system where resources are allocated based on student needs, rather than just historical spending patterns or the whims of individual school boards. But in practice, it's incredibly difficult to create a formula that captures the nuances of every situation.
Right.
For example, a school with a high percentage of students with disabilities or English language learners might need additional resources that wouldn't be reflected in a simple headcount formula.
So it's a balancing act, trying to create a system that's fair and equitable, while also recognizing that there's no one-size-fits-all solution.
Exactly. And this tension between standardization and flexibility is something we see playing out in education policy debates across the country.
That's a great point. This whole conversation about local control in Vermont is fascinating because nationally, we're seeing a bit of a different trend. The Heads Up Vermont section of the newsletter highlights some interesting developments in other states.
Yeah.
Some are revisiting their funding formulas, some grappling with the impact of climate change on schools, and some are even looking at things like cell phone bans in the classroom.
Right. And some of these approaches, they might seem pretty radical at first glance, but they, you know, they reflect this growing recognition that the challenges facing education, they're complex.
Right.
And they often require these innovative solutions. Take the cell phone ban, for example. I mean, it's definitely controversial. Strong arguments on both sides.
Right.
But proponents, they argue that cell phones, you know, they're a major distraction in the classroom.
Yeah.
They hinder student learning. Attention spans.
Yeah.
They point to research suggesting that even the mere presence of a cell phone.
Oh, wow.
Even if it's turned off.
Interesting.
Can have a negative impact on cognitive performance.
That's interesting. And it makes me think about how technology has become so intertwined with our lives.
Yeah.
It's almost like a constant presence, even when we're not actively using it.
Precisely. And then there's the whole issue of cyberbullying and the potential for social media to create this this toxic environment that spills over into the school day. So the argument goes, by removing cell phones from schools, you create a more focused learning environment and potentially reduce some of the social and emotional stressors that students are facing.
It sounds like they're trying to create a digital detox zone, at least for part of the day. But I imagine there are also some strong arguments against this kind of ban.
Absolutely. Opponents of the ban, they argue that, you know, cell phones are an essential tool for communication and learning in the 21st century.
Right.
They point out that many students, they rely on their phones to access educational resources, connect with their families, even stay safe during emergencies.
Right.
And there's also the concern that a ban might disproportionately impact students from low-income families, you know, who may rely on their phones as their primary means of internet access.
It seems like a classic case of unintended consequences. You try to solve one problem and you end up creating another.
Exactly. And it highlights the importance of careful consideration and thoughtful implementation when it comes to education policy. There's rarely a simple fix.
Right.
Any solution, it needs to be evaluated in terms of its potential impact on all students and the broader school community.
Speaking of challenges, this newsletter also paints a somewhat bleak picture of the current state of school leadership. There's a lot of talk about superintendent turnover, the shrinking pipeline of future leaders, and the growing pressures on those who are currently in the role.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenging time to be a school leader. And it's not just about managing budgets and logistics, although those are certainly part of the job.
Right.
But we're talking about leadership in a time of profound societal shifts. Think about the impact of social media on student well-being, the growing need for mental health support in schools, the ongoing debates about curriculum and inclusion.
Yeah.
These are complex issues that demand a new kind of leadership.
So it's not just about being a good manager. It's about being a visionary, a problem solver, a community builder, maybe even a therapist in some cases.
In a way, yes. School leaders today, they need to be incredibly adaptable, empathetic, and resilient. They need to be skilled communicators who can navigate diverse perspectives, build consensus, and they need to be deeply committed to equity and social justice, ensuring that all students have the opportunity to thrive.
It's starting to make sense why it might be hard to recruit and retain qualified candidates for these positions.
Yeah, it's a demanding job, but it's also incredibly rewarding, and the stakes are high.
Right.
The decisions that school leaders make, they have a profound impact on the lives of young people and the future of our communities.
This brings us back to our listener. Why should someone who may not be directly involved in education care about any of this? What's the takeaway for them?
Here's the thing. Education is the foundation of a thriving society. The quality of our schools, it directly affects our economy, our civic life, our collective well-being. So whether or not you have children in the system, what happens in education, it matters to all of us.
Absolutely.
It's in everyone's best interest to have strong, effective school leadership and to be informed about the challenges and opportunities facing our schools.
I completely agree. Now, speaking of opportunities, the newsletter also touches on some interesting new approaches to social-emotional learning, or SEL as it's often called. What's that about?
So SEL is all about helping students develop the skills they need to manage their emotions, build relationships, and make responsible decisions.
Right.
It's essential for creating a positive and supportive school climate, and it's increasingly recognized as a critical factor in academic success.
So it's not just about academics anymore. It's about educating the whole child.
Exactly. We're recognizing that education needs to address the whole child, not just their academic abilities. And SEL is a vital part of that holistic approach.
The article had some concrete examples of how to make SEL stick in schools. Anything that stood out to you?
One key point was the importance of integrating SEL into the fabric of the school day rather than treating it as a separate program.
Okay.
This could involve incorporating mindfulness practices into classrooms, teaching conflict resolution skills, or creating opportunities for students to engage in service learning projects.
It sounds like it requires buy-in from the entire school community, not just the teachers.
Absolutely. It requires a shared vision, strong leadership, and ongoing professional development for staff. But the benefits are well worth the effort. When SEL is done well, it can transform the culture of a school, creating a more inclusive, equitable, and supportive environment for all students.
That's fantastic. And it brings us back to the question we posed earlier. What qualities and skills will be most essential for school leaders to navigate the complexities of the future? After this deep dive, do you have any thoughts on that?
I think we've touched on many of them already, but I would emphasize the importance of adaptability, empathy, and a deep commitment to equity. School leaders need to be comfortable with ambiguity, embrace change, and be willing to challenge the status quo. They'll need to be skilled listeners who can build relationships with diverse stakeholders and create a shared vision for the future of their schools.
And perhaps most importantly, they need to be passionate about education and believe in the potential of every student.
Without a doubt. That passion is what will fuel their work and inspire others to join them in creating a better future for all learners.
Well said. Now, there's one more topic from this newsletter that I think deserves some attention.
Okay.
It's a bit of a controversial one, but it raises some important questions about how education is funded and governed.
Yes. The nimble coup, as one article called it. This refers to the potential for a shift in power dynamics, with foundations playing a more prominent role in shaping education policy.
The newsletter doesn't shy away from strong opinions on this topic. We've got quotes about concerted efforts and warnings about the erosion of local control. It's clearly a sensitive issue.
And rightfully so. I mean, the role of philanthropy in education is a complex one.
Right.
On the one hand, private funding can provide valuable resources and support innovation. On the other hand, it raises concerns about accountability and whether private interests might unduly influence public education.
It seems like there's a tension between the desire for efficiency and the importance of democratic processes.
Exactly. And it's a tension that we need to grapple with openly and honestly. We need to have a robust public conversation about what role philanthropy should play in education and how we can ensure that public schools remain accountable to the communities they serve.
This has been an incredibly thought-provoking conversation. We've covered a lot of ground, exploring everything from potential overhauls of Vermont's education system to national trends in school leadership and social-emotional learning to the role of philanthropy in shaping education policy. But I feel like we've only just scratched the surface.
What's fascinating is that education is constantly evolving. You know, the challenges we face today, they'll likely look different tomorrow.
Right.
And that's why it's so important to stay informed, engaged, and willing to challenge our assumptions about what education should be and how it should be delivered.
I couldn't agree more. So, to our listener, don't let this be the end of the conversation. Explore the source material further, learn more about the issues we've discussed, and share your own thoughts and questions with us.
And remember, the future of education is not something that happens to us. It's something we create together.
I love that. Thanks for joining me on this deep dive. It's been a truly enlightening conversation.
The pleasure was all mine.
So where do we go from here? We've talked about these huge potential shifts in Vermont, national trends, the challenges facing school leaders. It feels like a lot is at stake.
What's crucial, I think, is that we don't just observe these changes.
Yeah.
We actively participate in shaping them. This isn't just about policymakers or educators. It's about all of us.
That makes sense. But what can, like, the average person actually do? I mean, I'm not going to run for school board tomorrow.
Fair enough. But there are so many ways to get involved. You know, start by staying informed about what's happening in your local schools.
Okay.
Attend school board meetings, ask questions, share your perspectives, support organizations that are working to improve education, mentor students. I mean, the possibilities are endless.
It's about recognizing that education is everyone's responsibility, not just something that happens in a school building.
Exactly. And remember, our understanding of what constitutes, you know, good education that's constantly evolving.
Right.
What worked for previous generations might not be sufficient for the challenges and opportunities facing young people today. We need to be open to new ideas, willing to experiment, and always learning.
You know, it's interesting. One of the articles we looked at discussed the increasing unhappiness among young people, especially girls, and they linked it to social media and smartphones. It's a sobering reminder that education isn't just about academics. It's about well-being, too.
That's a profound point. Schools are increasingly being asked to address a wider range of social and emotional needs.
Yeah.
And that requires us to rethink not only what we teach, but how we teach it and how we create those supportive learning environments.
It feels like we're on the cusp of a major shift in education. There's a lot of uncertainty, some anxiety, but also a sense of possibility.
I share that sense of optimism. This is a time for bold leadership, creative problem solving, and a renewed commitment to equity and excellence. It's a time for all of us to step up and help shape the future of learning.
This deep dive has given me, and hopefully you listening as well, a lot to think about. I encourage you to check out the Pasted Text newsletter excerpts yourself and learn more about the issues we discussed today.
And remember, the future of education depends on us staying engaged in the conversation. Keep exploring, keep questioning, keep learning.
Well said. Thanks for joining me on this deep dive. It's been an incredibly insightful conversation.
The pleasure was all mine. Until next time.